Devin Jorgensen and Mona Dodery. Three Musketeers of Stormwater. All right, this is an informational item, so we have no procedures to read, no swearing in to do. We're just talking. So it's all yours, folks.
Good afternoon, members of the board and Acting Chairman Norman. Norman, I did it! Oh
my God.
Acting Chairman Norin.
Oh my God.
That's going to live on an infamy, because how many times you get called Norman?
Let me take a minute.
I can't save
you from this one.
I got to shake it off, people.
Oh, my, that's what's going to say on my gravestone. You know that?
I'm sorry. It's
AKA
late in the day.
AKA Norman.
It's late in the day. We're all tired.
Oh, my gosh. Okay,
all right.
Mona.
I'm going to shake it off. Start. Keep going. Okay. So I'm Mona Dougherty, a senior engineer here and the manager of your stormwater program. Your industrial stormwater staff is here today to give you an update on the industrial stormwater program and the renewed general permit. So I will be giving you an overview of the program history and implementation. Devin Jorgensen is going to discuss our review of the annual reports. Paul Karen is going to discuss case studies and significant changes in the reissued permit, and then he's also going to finish talking about our future priorities. So the stormwater program includes industrial construction and municipal programs. In the North Coast region, Paul Karen is our industrial stormwater staff. Colleen Hunt is our municipal stormwater staff. Our construction stormwater staff position is currently vacant, and Devin Jorgensen is filling in. All of these programs are based on best management practices for compliance. This is a history of the industrial stormwater program. The important dates to note here are that in 1987, the Clean Water Act was amended to add both industrial and municipal stormwater as point sources. And the other important date is that July 1st, 2015 is the effective date for the new industrial stormwater permit. And that's one of the reasons we're here to discuss this with you today. So Paul likes to tell me that, sometimes loudly, no, I'm just teasing, a shorthand way to think of the facilities that need industrial stormwater permit coverage are that they make, move, or mine product. So some of these example industries are sawmills, wineries, quarries, concrete and asphalt manufacturing, composting and soil mixers, trucking and hauling, auto dismantling, and recycling both metals and municipal waste. We have roughly 350 facilities enrolled in our program in the North Coast region. The pollutants of concern are one of the big ones is sediment. 40% of the exceedances are sediment related, and Devin is going to discuss that with you further. We also are concerned about metals, hydrocarbons, chemicals that affect pH. So those are some of the other big ones that cause exceedances of the benchmark standards. Okay, so this is a statewide program. It's implemented pretty consistently statewide and by the regional boards within that region. The general permit is adopted by the State Water Board. The IGP, which is the shorthand for Industrial Stormwater General Permit, requires monitoring and annual reporting. It also compares pollutant levels to benchmarks found in US EPA's 2008 Industrial Stormwater Permit. It also, I better get this part right here, it also includes the use of best available technology economically achievable and best conventional pollutant control technology to control pollutants. This is the BAT-BCT standard that you may be aware of. These permits also require that the discharges support water quality standards in receiving waters. And with that, now Devin is going to discuss the annual reports with you.
Thank you, Mona, and good afternoon, Mr. Chairman Norin, and members of the board.
Outdone, Mona. That's outdone.
My name is Devin Jorgensen, scientific aide of your staff, and I will be presenting a brief overview of our 2013-2014 annual report review. And please note that these reports were submitted under the existing permit, as the reissued permit does not take effect until July 1st of this year. So our objectives of reviewing the annual reports were to evaluate water quality data, verify permit compliance, and better prioritize inspections. After our review, we decided to take follow-up action to provide feedback to permittees on their compliance and to notify them of significant changes in the reissued permit, which again takes effect on July 1st. One of three letters were issued to each facility in response to their report submission. The three types of response letters were benchmark exceedance, did not sample, and in compliance. 44% of the letters were benchmark exceedances. Of these exceedances, 40% were sediment-related total suspended solids, 30% were metals, 18% pH, and 12% hydrocarbons. The letter also included information on the numeric action levels in the reissued permit. 20% of the letters were to those who did not complete the required sampling. Some of the permittees reported that their facility did not discharge stormwater, and others reported that there was not a qualifying storm event. The letter encouraged them to increase their efforts to sample, as well as informed them of the more robust sampling requirements in the reissued permit. 34% of the letters were sent to facilities whose reports demonstrated compliance. These letters acknowledged and thanked the permittees for their efforts. And the remaining 2% of our facilities did not submit an annual report. Based on our review, we have determined that our priorities are to inspect those facilities that have reported a benchmark exceedance multiple years in a row, did not sample, new enrollees, facilities that certify no exposure, and non-filers. And now Paul will present the significant changes in the reissued permit and case studies of improved sites in our region.
Excuse me, Paul, before, am I correct that we are seeing only one-third of industrial dischargers or stormwater dischargers are, only one-third are complying with state law?
Well, while they might not always be in full compliance with the permit, you know, stormwater permits are a little different in that sometimes you might not be in full compliance, but you also might not be in violation. So one of the good things about the new permit is that it's going to clarify some of these gray areas that exist in the old permit, which, as you know, NPDES permits are supposed to be adopted every 5 years. This is a 1997 permit that our folks are currently operating under. So unfortunately, the enforceability of the permit is one of its big downfalls or setbacks or issues that we have with it as regulators. So the new permit is going to make compliance and violation a lot clearer and be a lot easier to do enforcement. But there are now some gray areas where there is not full compliance, but there might not necessarily be an enforceable violation. Does that help?
Yeah, but I think I saw 44% had an exceedance.
That's an exceedance of a benchmark level. It's not necessarily a permit violation. It's also not necessarily compliance with the benchmark's values. So what that basically signals for us when we see that is we then write them a letter saying, we've noted that you are exceeding benchmark levels. That's an indication that your BMPs are not adequate and you are not adequately controlling pollutants. So then we write them a letter and encourage them to improve their BMPs. We also tell them that we will be following up with an inspection to observe both their the types of BMPs they have as well as their maintenance. And oftentimes we've gotten responses back from those letters telling us the improvements they're going to do to their best management practices.
Okay. But the new permit should be much better in terms of putting an end to this.
Indeed.
In some ways, but you know, stormwater is always somewhat difficult. It's a very iterative process, so there's iterations and improvement, and we're going to continue to see that type of process.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Norman. Just kidding. Chairman Norman, Will Massey and Valerie, my name is Paul Kieran. I only said it because I only have staff left here. I'm a water quality engineer with the regional board. I am the industrial stormwater practitioner, so to speak. What I'm going to do is go over the significant changes in the new permit and then go over three case studies that we feel were successful in terms of pollution reduction. So let's get right to it. Okay, here are the significant changes. There are additional sampling and visual monitoring. This gets back to what Bill's question is. The old permit, Bill, had what's known as 3 business days of dry weather prior to you sampling. So if you worked Monday through Friday, you could only sample on a Thursday or a Friday. And that was the biggest mistake in the permit. That term business really threw people for a loop. It gave people the option to say to us, well, we didn't have a qualifying storm event. And it was hard for us to prove otherwise. So it's 4 times a year in the new permit. That's twice a year on a calendar basis. So from January through July, you'll be doing 2 samples. And from July through December, you'll be 2 more samples. So it's 4 times a year versus 2 times presently. It does include the possibility of sample reduction and also the possibility of combining samples in the lab from pretty much discharges of the same pollutant loading. The lab can make that option of combining, say, 4 samples into 1, which will save the permittee some money. Conditional exclusions. The existing permit has a light industrial exemption, which allowed certain light industrial activities to get out of the permit. That goes away with the new permit. We have what now is known as a conditional no exposure certification, which basically says they're for industries that are subject to the IGP, but they've really done a good job of preventing any kind of stormwater pollution on their site. They have coverages, they move things inside, their products are now stored in a warehouse, so they don't basically have any exposure. We can get them out of, not out of the permit, but it's a no exposure certification, which is a much less rigorous permit. Numeric action levels, NALs, you'll hear a lot about these in the futures. These are discharge limits above which require improved BMPs. Some NALs will be difficult to meet without significant BMP upgrades. This permit is making some permittees make big financial decisions about what they want to do on their site. For instance, trucking companies on gravel may want to make a decision about paving their site. It's expensive, but when you look at the overall aspect of not doing that, then they face this permit and this TSF levels, which they may never be able to meet under wintertime conditions. So you'll hear a lot more about NALs. Now, when NALs are exceeded, we have what's known as an exceedance response action. And that requires a consultant to come out on site, write a report that basically suggests additional BMPs to be put on site. So you'll hear a lot more about both NALs and ERAs, or exceedance response actions. We have electronic reporting. There is no more paper 2 weeks from now. No more paper will be accepted by the regional board, I think, except under extreme hardship conditions. But we expect that to be pretty much few and far between. So paper's going away. It includes public access, which creates complete transparency, not only from my report writing, but also from permit deliverables from the permittees. Mm-hmm. Everything's transparent now into this program. And that's a difference. It's a big difference between the new permit and the old permit. Minimum required BMPs. The new permit has 6 specified BMPs that you have to employ on your site. They are non-structural. They're things that most industries should be doing now anyway. SPCC plans, erosion controls, training, maintenance, preventative maintenance, those sort of things. Non-structural. We made that clear to people. You can do this program without a lot of money spent on putting structural things underground or spending a lot of money. A lot of it's just things they should be doing anyway. And so State Board made that clear. Redefining a qualifying storm event. I mentioned before to Bill, the old permit had business days. That word business really screwed us up. It really did, pardon my language. But it really put a hamper on us enforcing on people, because they just came back and said, look, we work 5 days a week and it didn't, you know, it rained Monday. So we, you know, that kind of thing. So it hamstrung us in terms of being able to enforce on people. So that will change with the new permit.
Compliance groups replace what is now known as group monitoring. Group monitoring now is, for instance, trucking companies get together and a group of them, say 10 companies, will be under one consultant. The consultant will go out, look at all 10 sites. Only one facility per year will sample. Now they will all sample. Compliance groups will all now sample twice per year. That's a big change. And it's taken a little bit for the group people to get used to the fact that every site will be sampling. 303 delist considerations. We're going to reopen this permit next year to include language regarding the TMDLs. And that's going to be interesting in terms of what that language will look like. But certainly some permittees who are in 303 delisted areas will need to do additional parameter sampling based on those pollutants that might be coming from their site that affect the 303 delisting. Stay tuned for that. Design standards for treatment control BMPs. That's a change too. And it's both for flow-through systems and for volume control systems. So there are standards in the permit that when you put in an advanced treatment, some sort of engineered system, you do have to meet certain standards, certain flow rates and certain volume rates. So there are engineering considerations in the new permit that need to be dealt with. It addresses discharges to ocean waters. We don't have many stormwater discharges on the coast that have a direct outfall to the ocean, but when there is that case, there is ocean monitoring that's required, and that can be difficult on the North Coast, given that the fact that some of these outfalls are 60 to 70 feet above the ocean. We've worked with some facilities in terms of the safety of that kind of ocean monitoring, but that is a reality in ocean monitoring, and doing actual ocean monitoring at the point of discharge will be a part of this new permit. Additional requirements for repeat noncompliance. We are looking at basically three levels in the permit. There's a baseline level that everybody starts out. There's level one and there's level two. Obviously, the key is to stay in baseline, but just as importantly, stay out of level two. Level two can become very expensive. Level two for some facilities will not be that hard to fall into. Qualified Industrial Storm Practitioner, QISP, similar to the CGP's QSP, Qualified SWIP Practitioner. There will be trained consultants who will be required to go out on site when a site has reached level one or level two. But in level one, a QISP or a consultant would have to come out, write a report suggesting additional BMPs, so on and so forth. So again, when you get into a level above baseline, you're spending money on outside consultants. What I'll do now is go over three case studies. These are success stories that we feel very proud of. We've worked hard on them, and we expect to have more in the future. So if you want to hit the lights real quick, let's go through this. Three of them, there's a boat painting facility, an auto wrecking yard, and a soil mixing facility. Here's the first one. I came on site unannounced, which I always do, and saw this going on. Basically, boat paint stripping yard, original site inspection, boat high-pressure power washing, waste discharging to storm drain. These are old boats. They're full of lead. They're full of all kinds of heavy metals. It was draining right out the door. Basically, this is the point of discharge to Humboldt Bay. Through some arm twisting, some warnings, and some cooperation with this permittee, they finally got it. And the recent upgrades to the facility include an installation of a four-stage oil-water separator, which includes three settling tanks and one holding tank, where solids and oils are separated from the wastewater and properly handled. The wastewater is then sent to the sanitary sewer via an on-site connection, and it resulted in the complete elimination of boat paint stripping waste being discharged to Humboldt Bay. Now, this is a tough picture to see, but here's where everything drained into before. That picture before showed that going to this. So they didn't change their storm drain system. They wash their boats, paint come off, comes down in here, they put a valve in here, says they close off the valve to the storm drain, pump it up to the system, treats it, goes to the sanitary. After they are finished stripping the boats, they'll wash the asphalt right down the drain into the system, then they'll open it back up to the storm drain system. So this basically acts as a dual delivery, either to the storm drain system or to the sanitary system. Pretty easy, pretty quick, and the differences in the conditions at the outfall of the bay are pretty dramatic. Second one is an auto recycling yard. This is the original inspection.
Green.
This yard was a mess. It really was a mess. I mean, you see all the things that normally you do not do on a wrecking yard anymore. You don't stack vehicles. You don't have 18 inches of mud and crap on the ground. And it was really, really oil-stained soils, poor housekeeping. Another shot of the facility. This is the crusher. It was really a bad scene. We enforced on them. There was outside enforcement on them. Again, a lot of pressure. And basically, the recent upgrades to the facility, they installed a stormwater treatment system. First of all, they put a 2-foot berm around the lower section of the site just to retain stormwater on the site, pumped it up into an above-ground 25,000-gallon retention pond, included a 3-stage treatment system, settling tanks, filter cartridges, and activated carbon. And there have been no discharges of untreated stormwater since the system was installed. Here's the system. This is the above-ground 25,000-gallon tank. This is the pump right here that basically takes the water from here, which is the 2-foot berm around this whole lower area of the site. So the water is retained on site, pumped into the system, and pumped through the treatment system. I want to go back in there. That didn't work.
Hey, Paul, would a site like that have an MPDS permit then for discharge of sanitary sewer? Or they could do that through, say, like if say that site was in Cloverdale is not good, Ukiah, just for conversation's sake. Cloverdale has a tertiary plant. They could permit their dischargers. Would a site like that then be probably subject because, say, they discharged to a sanitary sewer, that effluent, right? Treated,
no.
On the treated side.
They actually treat and then discharge to the storm drain system.
They do, okay.
Yes. And if they were, we do have many industrial facilities that do pre-treatment and then they discharge to a wastewater treatment plant. We don't actually regulate the facilities.
Right.
The wastewater treatment plant has a pre-treatment program for
good.
That.
Thank you.
Here's the third one. This is a original inspection of a soil mixing facility. This is an old mill site up in the North Coast. And what has gone on with soil mixing is very interesting. Soil mixers used to mix topsoil. Now they mix high-energy grow media for folks up in the hills. And they've become fertilizer mixers.
The pineapple growers.
So basically we're bringing them into the IGP program and the fact that fertilizer mixers are subject to our program. Again, a former mill site, there was an intensive cleanup effort on this site. Removal of wood waste, concrete, metal, and other debris, non-native plant removal, creek restoration, installation of pollution control devices. They will be in the process of enrolling for the IGP before July 1st. This is an old picture. It's not in your handout, but I found it late, and I put it in here. This is the old mill site, and it'll give you an idea of what went on. There's the TP burner. This is a 5-acre log pond, 8 feet deep, that later became their landfill. This is all their wood waste that all got pushed into the landfill when the mill closed. I mean, it was a real scene.
Very common.
This is back in the 50s. What they've done, they do rainwater harvesting. They've got 5 of these tanks now on site. Rainwater harvesting is very interesting. Not only can you reuse the water, mm-hmm. but you prevent the water from contacting pollutants on the ground. And that's important. You're collecting and you're also avoiding. Screens to reduce wind erosion. They put these up. It's a windy area, and they put these up basically for keeping undercover piles of feedstocks from blowing around and keeping them basically under control. On-site detention ponds, this is a part of that 5-acre log pond that they basically cleaned out and created some on-site detention ponds. This is the site of their worm castings, by the way. Why does that do that? There we go. And our future priorities in the stormwater program, again, as Devon had mentioned before, is inspect sites that have never been inspected. Address soil mixers with IGP coverage. Again, there's 3 or 4 that are hanging out there now that are, again, in that same sort of arena. They're mixing high-energy soil mixes, and we're going to get them under coverage. Follow up on non-compliant sites. Enforce failure to submit reports and work with sites not subject to IGP that may have water quality issues. We've talked about possibly working with the contractors on contractor yards, which can be dirty. They're not subject to the IGP permit, but we certainly want to go and work with them cooperatively to help clean their yards up. That's it from here, and any questions for?
Questions from board members? Paul, I got a couple. For one thing, thank you for this. Thank you, Devin and Mona, too. And, you know, this is an interesting permit. You know, disclosure, I work on this stuff, and I've got a couple sites going now. And you know, it's still, this permit's still built on the backbone of implementation of BMPs, check, verify, and amend, sampling, and inspection reporting. It's still pretty much that's what it is. The teeth in here really become the numeric action limits, which are both annual and instantaneous. I think you're right, Paul. I think there's a world out here that at least a piece of it that's going to have a hard time staying in a baseline category. I've heard level two or tier two called tier two purgatory, that basically once you get in, you kind of can't get out of the thing.
And it's funny you mention that, because we talked about if someone's stuck in tier two, in other words, they can't get out of it.
Yeah.
Do they every year have to come out and have a PE come out and do this reiterative? And
no,
they
Paul,
say, one time's good, but once you're stuck in it, you're stuck in it.
Yeah, and you had mentioned, you know, a site maybe grappling with a pH problem, and you know, we recently looked at a site that does concrete recycling, so they have pulverized concrete everywhere in a dust form, and I think their pH is going to be about 12, and it's going to be really hard to deal with. And so what do you do with that, right? And so as it goes, a couple things with this. For one thing, I think that as this thing plays, I have talked to Steve Moore and I've talked to Greg Gearhart previous about the fact that for a permit that was adopted April 1st of 2014, the state at the state board level was very late in the game to notify and engage the regulated community that this new permit is coming and is here. And you have to be buckled in and ready to go by July 1st. We've had some pretty frantic phone calls in the last couple of weeks from people that just are scrambling get there. As it goes, though, I think that, you know, there's the opportunity here is to get the word out and to get, you know, capture as many as we can. At the same time, TMDL and the relationship, you mentioned that this could be reopened in a year to incorporate TMDL type impairments. That's going to be interesting. I would imagine exclusions are going to have to be, or exceptions are going to have to be built into that. For instance, say the Russian River system, at least in part, is impaired from indicator bacteria. If you're if you're operating a metal shop, your chances of contributing to a bacterial impairment are probably nil. And it seems to me that there could be some exclusions or rationale built into that system. I think the no effect coverage actually is quite interesting. The no effect coverage has 11 categories that you evaluate a site on. And from that standpoint, I think, you know, you self-certify in essence. Yep. And you self-certify on SMART, so you do that in the light of day.
Well, it's interesting, too, is we're going to be the ones making that decision, the NEC versus, you know, NONA or neither.
Yes.
And I've told people, don't expect it too soon. We'll probably wait a winter, look at the winter, and look at it when it's raining to see how your system's working or not working. But yeah, Don't expect it right out the gate.
Yeah, and then, you know, full disclosure, too, you know, you and I talked about the fact that we visited a trucking yard recently that isn't captured. This is still based on SIC code, Standard Industrial Classification Code, somewhat, and that from that standpoint, that's kind of a weird way to classify these sites. But there are sites out here in this world that don't immediately fall under the general permit that have a threat to ground to surface water discharge here. And I think there's an opportunity here for staff, for you guys, to engage within some of this community out here that is aware of this, but that is not going to be subject to the industrial permit, but they have an obligation to manage a site in accordance with good practice. And I think the opportunity, I would encourage you to engage within some of our, say, professional community groups, industry groups maybe, that you reach out to some of them and say, hey, you may not be directly applicable to this, but you know what? You discharge to an MS4 and you capture it with Colleen's program, or you capture it with direct outreach and bring them into at least, you know, hey, every day is a potential rainy day here, guys. And I think that's important, especially when you look at more of a built environment. Last thing, you know, as it goes, you know, I'm very interested in how the metrics look on this. We have 300 plus sites in the North Coast that were permitted under the OLFIS permit. This is an expanded permit with an expanded base. I'm kind of curious how many actually sign up and go for it. And then I'm interested in how you guys do out there, what you'll find in inspections and compliance into this program. This is, stormwater is very interesting. As the questions that Bill Massey asked are absolutely spot on. It's not straight, linear ahead like most permits we deal with. It's an iterative process that, you know, you're iteratively working to make a site better. And stormwater's tough.
Very tough. And there's a fair amount of facilities that have not recertified yet. Next week, I'll be doing a lot of cold calling to people because I don't want people in our region to be out of luck come July 1st.
No, in fact, that permit says, and one reason why I talked to Steve Moore was is that it says if you do not do that, you're subject to a $5,000 fine immediately. Yeah. And in fact, they reiterated at that workshop that you and I and a couple other people were at in Santa Rosa. And that's tough, man.
And if there's thousands that are in that situation, I am curious how State Board's going to handle it.
Well, in the world of stormwater, the three legs of the stool of stormwater, this is important. This permit was way overdue to be updated and brought into current standards, and it's going to mean a lot of prioritization and inspection on staff time to try and get out here and look and see what's happening, and using metrics to make then your decisions about what you do. I would like to request that you come back to us in the near future. You know, you guys decide, just put it in your mind that you're going to come back to us at some point, maybe after this winter, and say, hey, this is what happened. Yep. You know, let's see what happened out here.
I certainly will. I want to leave you with the fact that once we started this letter writing campaign, which was 2 years ago, we got immediate response from most permittees. They called us up saying, hey, we got this letter, especially the ones that had exceedances. Here's what we're doing. I mean, it really was a rapid response, and we'll continue to do it and follow up with inspections, and the results have been quite dramatic.
Well, and I think I got a compliment. You know, the way that you guys are approaching this, I think, is right. You know, you could go in here with a big stick and try to swing at them, but the reality is that, again, stormwater and bringing people into this new permit or bringing it up to this current permit, you know, it really is going to take, I think, some collective work to get there. This permit in and of itself is a couple hundred pages. Yeah. I mean, it's a whopper, and, you know, even if you use the CASQA template for it, it's a 90-page template for that thing before you even put an appendices in it. It's pretty steep. It's no small endeavor to take that thing on. So I encourage you to come back and talk to us. I encourage you to, you know, see what's out there and use your judgment and wisdom about how you go forward and fill us in. Let us know what happens. Any board member questions? Did you get your questions answered, Mr. Massey? Any questions? Fantastic. Thank you,
thank you
very much.
And Valerie, great to see you as a board member. It's wonderful.
Yeah, watch out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She did.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Norin, is that how you say
it? Yeah, that's how my mom said it, yeah. Mona couldn't get that right. But
did you notice how gutsy he gets as he gets closer to the door?
Short timer.
I understand that Matt and Mr. Corbett and Mr. Giusti are wrapping up, and they will be back fairly soon, but I suggest we take a short break because I think they all want to be back here for the next item.
I like that. That's great. We will take a 10-minute break at a minimum to 4:30, and we'll come back and wrap this up.